From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Probably one of your favorite scores of a period film of the past 10 years, be it Imitation Game or The Curious Case of Benjamin Button or the newest film by Guillermo del Toro, The Shape of Water, it was probably scored by my guest, Alexandre Desplat. I'm sorry, Academy Award winner, Alexandre Desplat.
Oh, beautiful.
But he also did one of my other favorite scores of the year, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. What's interesting to me about you, Alexandre, is that you do so much work in period film. You score a lot of period films. Is that a specific interest of yours?
Maybe it's because the movies which are more period films have a more Romanesque, can you say that, Romanesque?
Yes.
Feel to them, so they call for music a bit more than, it's not easy to score a film happening nowadays with most of the directors who direct movies which are happening nowadays, they use a lot of tracks or existing tracks or things. But so maybe, I don't know, maybe that's why, maybe I feel that there's a larger environment of imagination in which I can be creative, maybe.
I wonder that too, because there is Romanesque. There's a very romantic feel, but there's also a really kind of a lyric sweep to your stuff. And I even like your anime work. And my favorite scores of yours happens to be The Secret Life of Pets.
Thank you.
Which feels, it feels like Debussy and Mancini at the same time.
That's a good mix.
it is. And then again, that's that kind of propulsive lyric sweep of yours, which mm-hmm. I associate with so many things. Even in the Imitation Game, you managed mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. And there's the sense of, for you, of keeping the film in motion, isn't there?
That's true. Yeah, I like the idea that the music helps the movie to drive on, to push on, to move on, and the audience to be always hooked to the film. And I like this combination that you suggested of Debussy and Mancini, or Ravel and John Williams. So you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I have been influenced by both cultures, by the French and the American, because my parents studied in America when they were in the 50s.
In California, right?
Yeah. So as a child, I was under really a lot of influence of American culture. Our fridge was an American fridge that I brought back from America.
Yeah.
The toaster, yes, it has, and even the cutlerware was, the plates we had were Russell Wright.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it was not Limoges, it was Russell Wright. So it was a strange thing to be as split into as I was when I was a child.
But even the movies are so much about kind of a sort of a cultural clash. I mean, certainly in The Shape of Water, they're literally sort of two, an otherworldly culture and a culture of someone who doesn't speak. And that idea of these two opposing emotional forces, I can find in your work too.
No, it's true. It's true. I guess we all have, we're all made of several forces, and in The Shape of Water, that it's obvious that you can feel that the music is not what you see on screen, because what you see on screen is 1962. It's a bit off, it's a bit strange, because some strange things happen there, but the cars, the looks, the buildings, everything, the deco, it's frankly the late 50s, early 60s. But the score is written by a very young man, me, in 2017, and he's half French and half Greek. So, of course, it's a bit different. But I've made sure that the music was not actually too much of a division, too far from what the movie is offering. For example, we didn't try and use too much electronic to make the film more up to date or modern, because modern doesn't mean anything. Modernity comes from the quality and the advanced subject that you offer. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. Modern can be dated tomorrow. So we really try to keep some kind of a proximity with 1962, but not really. You know, again, it's a bit off. It's not really right there.
Well, I find myself thinking so much about the way, since we're talking about this, two different kind of musics intersect so often in your scores. Almost basically, there's a hint of modernity in what you're doing, or at least of that period, but also of the music that may have influenced that period. I mean, I feel like there's the past and the present are kind of constantly grappling with each other in your scores.
Well, I do think that music is a... is something you learn from heritage. It's something that, you know, there's 2,000, at least 2,000 that we know, kind of know, years of music. And I think that a composer or any musician, actually, any player, any person who wants to be a real musician, a professional musician, should know as much as possible about these 2,000 years and just, you know, put himself in a tradition of that, trying to open a little new door, maybe a little window somewhere that will lead to somewhere else or to something else. I am in a collective artwork which makes the window a bit narrow. It's not like I'm you know, writing concert music where I'm free of my movements, but I like that. I've chosen to do that because I like the combination of music and images. I think that's what I was made for. I always dreamed of doing that, and watching the images influence me and help me have a language of my own and speak out, which I used to do when I was a flautist, but I found it too limited as an instrument. Being a composer, you can play all the instruments. So you have all the, you know, your voice can go very high, very low, very soft, very loud. And so it opens a huge range of possibilities when you write for films. But you can still open a little window for the generations to come.
But what you're doing with that music, in the way that you're really introducing in a very subtle way, time. I mean, I so often I talked about propulsive in these scores, and this idea of moving things forward, because things for these characters are often moving forward whether they want them to or not. I think about the score for The King's Speech, which is almost as pushing him forward, and he doesn't want to be pushed forward in a way.
Yeah, it's that, of course. It's the way music can actually convey for the audience the past, the present, but also the future of a character, of the several characters. It's all these things that you try and play with. It's got to be playful. You have to play with the actors. I think the more I go, the more I progress in my life, the more I want to be on the stage with them. You know.
We're talking about music being a character with my guest, Oscar and Alexandre Desplat is the treatment. I guess as you're talking about that, I found myself thinking of the score for maybe a movie that put you on the map here for English speakers, now being Girl with a Pearl Earring, which, again, is those things. It's both about the world sort of catching up with these characters, whether they want it to or not.
Absolutely.
And that playfulness, but also that sort of sense of the impending future is in that score too for me.
Absolutely, yes. Even though we're in a world of silence and restrained emotions, you want to feel the beating heart of this young servant. And only music can do that. And it's the same in Shape of Water. Only music can convey, you know, or emphasize the spirit of Sally Hawkins, of Eliza, played by Sally Hawkins. The music just make it shine even more, and shows that she has a little engine inside her that is carefree, that is full of kindness and benevolence.
I guess I was thinking about this too, because you're talking about theater, and I guess I've been doing a little research. I found that, which I didn't know, that Claude Baliff was you study with him.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
His Dracula score is kind of in all these things we're talking about, isn't it?
Well, you know, Claude Baliff was an incredible mentor and teacher. He at the Paris Conservatory, and the great thing about his education, he would not just teach you music, he would teach you the art of the time. If you would, you know, work on the Rite of Spring, Stravinsky, 1913, then we would go all the way around that era and see what was happening that year. But of course, we would also go through the score and you know, figure out the structure and the harmonic structure and the orchestration, the rhythms, the meters, everything. But but it was not just music, it was what was around. And I think also this teacher also helped me understand that music could have a wider range than just be music for musicians. And I guess also it helped me becoming a film composer, because, you know, music is not just music, it also is part of a collective artwork when you work for cinema.
But he was, what we're talking about, that idea of like making, understanding everything about that period, and also that music is rooted in that period, so you can't like compose a score and not have some notice of what's happening in that time. I mean,
absolutely. And when we do 1962 Shape of Water, I'm very careful in not going too far towards our times, because I would just disconnect the music from the story and from with the visuals actually also. So I have to be very careful in the orchestration and the type of music I write to make sure that there's a proximity that stays there. And in Girl with the Pearl Earring, it was the same. But as in Shape of Water, I didn't try to do a 1960, and in Girl with the Pearl Earring, a 1670 type of score. I try to give us a little scent of what it could be. And I didn't use Baroque instruments at the time. I just muffled all the instruments.
Which I thought was so interesting that you made a conscious decision to not use Baroque orchestrations or music.
Or your music, yes. There's some samba rhythms, but nobody can tell because it's played with the strings. But most of the strings are muted, and the flute is an alto flute. The trumpet has a mute, so everything is kind of also a bit gentle, like a Baroque orchestra. The sound of a Baroque orchestra, because of the character of the instruments, is very, very soft. And I tried to reproduce that, but with modern instruments. So it's also trying to connect your love of the history of music, of history of art, to what you're doing.
You also talk about the Nouvelle Vague, too, and it's interesting because a lot of those movies use music that was incredibly contemporary, mm-hmm. and also this kind of culture clash you're talking about, where the influence of American culture and the same influence you talked about was there, and rather than ignore it, they made it part of... It was basically a world where anything could happen.
Of course. Well, I mean, when Miles composes for Louis Malle, you know, in 59, L'Ascenseur pour l'Échafaud, he's right spot on. And it's become one of the most iconic soundtracks.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about that Elevator to the Gallows score as we were talking about it, because that's a score that feels like it's its own thing, but it's also about time and mm-hmm. about that time.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's about time and that time, because it's the music that young people would listen at the time, but also time, because the way the bass like has a bell like doom, 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 very slow tempo. And Miles improvises on top of that. It creates tension that's very... But, you know, Miles was a genius musician and a genius mind, so he understood what the film needed. You know, I hear people, you know, kind of overlooking at Miles' score because it's, oh, he improvised. Yeah, come on, he improvised. You cannot improvise unless you have made your mind about what you're going to do, because if it was just improvisation, it wouldn't work. It's spot on. And obviously all the motifs were prepared. It was not just at the last minute, and he knows exactly where to go. He's smart enough.
I think we can say safely that Miles Davis is pretty smart. Well, we'll take a break and talk about music and time with Academy Award winner Alexandre Desplat. His new score is for Guillermo del Toro's film The Shape of Water. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. My guest, who even as we speak is putting on his headphones, is composer Alexandre Desplat. His new score is for Guillermo del Toro's film, The Shape of Water. But perhaps you can think about something, gosh, going back to Sweet Revenge, that idea of there's a rhythm. In fact, the first time I sort of just going, I was thinking about, wow, that's really interesting that there is a rhythm, because so much of film scoring is about atmospherics. I mean, even now, people tend to be beholden to that. And I think about the people you're talking about, like Herman, who really broke from that idea of atmospheric score and use rhythms and create tension with those rhythms. And that idea of a constant tension, which is the tension of improvisation and jazz. That idea of tension is important to you, isn't it?
It is. And actually, what I like also about this constant tempo, if you pay attention to my scores very carefully, you will see that there's almost no rubato, never.
Why is that?
Because to me, it's a romantic end of the 19th century device. And coming back to what I was saying about all these music that have a pace, a rhythm, a pulse. Well, there's a pulse, and I like to have to keep a pulse when I write a piece. And the difficulty is how to start the pulse without being intruding, and how to stop it without feeling that suddenly something is falling down, or falling apart in when you're watching the film. So that's another way. There's many ways of dealing with that, but definitely I like the fact that the piece that starts when the music starts has a tempo, a pace, a pulse. It goes to the end, vanishes. It can come back, you know, vanish, come back, fade in, fade out at the same tempo. There's a score like this that I wrote called a movie called Read My Lips by Jacques Audiard.
Yeah.
And it's the tempo is at 80 BPM. And I keep it the same all the way for the whole film. But I can go down to 40, the half tempo, or double tempo at 160. But it feels the same pulse. You just have to divide the pulse. Musicians can understand, of course. But it's easy for anyone who's listening to understand that if you have 80 and you go twice quick, slower, or twice quicker, you have the same tempo. It's just, you know, I always try to explain to kids when they don't understand music theory that it's like several trains on the same tracks, you know, but with different speeds, but they're going to the same direction.
They have to be different speeds, or else it's going to be a lot to explain. But I think, though, as you're talking about Read My Lips, I was thinking about it too, because part of that tension is wondering when the 80s is going to come back. and there is this subliminal idea, and it really plays so beautifully in Shape of Water, where that count, because there's a count there too, and it really is the count of African music there, isn't it?
Well, there is a lot of that in my music. I played, I did two albums, and I also performed on stage with a great musician from Zaire, Ray Lema,
who's
a marvelous musician. He taught me a lot of things, and he even taught me how to play a special, beautiful blues on piano. And by working with him, you know, with great rhythms at 9/8 and with beautiful melodies and very long pieces where you have to be endurant when you play, I've learned a lot. And all these grooves, all these motifs are mixed in the music I write. They're always there. There's always something bouncing. Could it be the bass? Could it be the second violins or the woodwind in the back? There's always something bouncing and pulsing. But don't forget that even if there's a pulse, there can be a silent moment. Because if the pulse stops, it can start again.
I've always wanted to ask you this, is the way you use piano in scores is really interesting to me, because there's a lot of jazz signatures in the piano. Mm-hmm. I mean,
definitely.
That's in fact, I can tell one of your scores. But I like those signatures, even though there's a bit of Ravel in that too, right? Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the way you use piano in, for example, in Shape of Water.
Well, I'm glad we can talk about it. I'm not a pianist. I started playing piano when I was 5, but then I switched to trumpet and I switched to flute. So there was always a piano at home, and I always had a piano when I became an adult. So I used the piano, of course, but I'm not a pianist. I can't play in a concert. Flute was my instrument. That's the instrument I got the virtuosity, but not the piano. So, of course, since I'm not a pianist, and anyone can hear it if I write to play a piece for piano, I don't use the left hand as pianists would do. And I use the piano mostly for block chords or for just a melody line. And sometimes with no left hand. And I joke very often with the pianist in my sessions, as saying, oh, well, I could play it, you know. It's only the right hand. And I used because I love the fact that you can play the lower bass, you know, lines on, you know, on the left hand and have the piano ring in the higher register. I love the sparkle of that range, and so I use the piano in a very different way. In The Shape of Water, sometimes it does play some high tinkling, but there's a moment when they're she's teaching to the creature. Sally Hawkins is teaching to the creature the name Egg, and there's a couple of chords which are really, I mean, Bill Evans kind of chords. And what are they doing there? Well, maybe because Village Vanguard was 61 one year before. You know, the recording was in 1961.
Okay,
which is a good year.
A very good year, apparently, the year you were born. My guest. We're talking about the glories of using one hand with my guest, Alexandre Desplat, whose new score, of course, is The Shape of Water. But I've always wondered that, just because that piano is really makes an entrance, rather. I mean, I'm aware that you're being used for impact playing rather than for something a bit more conventionally musical.
Well, you know, it's hard not to be conventional. It's very hard. It's a lot of work. You have to...
But really, because so much of your work, again, because of these, for me, these kind of warring philosophies and these scores about the encroaching of the future versus trying to hold on to the present, which so many of these characters are doing. In fact, in almost every movie you've scored, that seems to be kind of this battle that's taking place. And that this fight is always happening, to me, seems... to demand that you not be conventional, that you seem to choose things that force you to think outside the box.
I guess you notice that I challenge myself. Each film is different from the previous one and from the next one. I try to, you know, to surprise myself. Otherwise, I'm going to be conventional, and it's really easy to be conventional. And I'm sure I've been in some scores because maybe the movie didn't offer me any enough ground that I could jump and bounce on, or maybe I was too tired. I don't know what it was, but when you have a movie like The Shape of Water that comes towards you, wow, everything's there, everything is in place, everything is so beautiful, so right, the emotions are so true. The actors are fantastic, the light, the photography, and so the music, you know, is open. The world of music is open, and if Guillermo, as a director, leaves you the keys, even though he has the key ring in his hand, he leaves you the key. So there's a long little, you know,
a long chain,
a long chain, but you have the key, and that makes a big difference because he's happy that you surprise him and give ideas and, you know, right or wrong, but he's happy to listen.
But you've worked so often, you've gone back to work with directors several times, and...
Well, they I would say they came back to me.
Forgive my...
Let's put it that way.
I was wrong, of course. I misspoke. Directors have approached you to return a number of times.
Yes.
And but each occasion has given you a chance. I was thinking about your incredible score for Unbroken, mm-hmm. which is really... And again, we're talking about another film about... knowing when to use silence, mm-hmm. or rather not to play music.
Yes.
And there's a lot of that in that score. Mm-hmm. What was your conversation like with Angelina Jolie about that score?
Well, again, some moments had to be really deep and strong and big, and some moments should respect the nature when they're on the sea, on the ocean. But there again, the rhythm is very important because he's a runner. He's a runner, and I was lucky enough to talk with Zamperini, because he lives...
Oh, you met Louis Zamperini?
Yeah, he actually lives, it was strange, in my street, in Los Angeles. So, yes, I know, it was very strange. I run in that street, and I had passed his house many times. So when Angelina took me to his house, I could not believe it. Yes, you know, the stopwatch, the pace of running. When you run, you know, many people who are listening are running, and then they know the dopamine that you feel and how you get into a trance when you run. I thought a lot about that when I wrote the score for Unbroken, especially for the very beginning of the film. But even at the end, when he wins again against the sadist Japanese camp keeper. This rhythm comes back, you know, this sensation of an athlete who's digging into his deeper self to find the energy and the force.
And stamina, yes. Yeah. It's a score about, it really is a kind of score about stamina, isn't it? About endurance.
Well, he told me something incredible in praying. How did you get the kick? And he said, my kick came from my training. When all my friends went back to the shower room, I would go up and down the steps of the stadium and continue. And that's where I got the kick from. When I was done running, I kept, you know, climbing steps. Up and down.
God, so he's going up and down steps, which is the thing you don't want to do when you're finished?
Exactly. And so he still had juice.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that... You've also, interestingly enough, since we were talking about Unbroken, you've done so many scores about real people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Imitation Game or The King's Speech or Unbroken or even Go with the Pearl Earring. There are a lot of scores you've done that have been about actual people. And because... If I would say anything else is...
The Queen.
The Queen. Oh, my gosh, of course. Yes, yes. Keep going on. But any number of these scores have been about real people. And what do you do, or what is it that... Because clearly people come to you for this kind of thing. You're sought out for this. What is it that you find attractive about doing scores about real-life people?
Maybe it's my curiosity of human beings, of history also. You know, replace yourself in a time of the past and figure out how people lived at the time and what were their emotions. You know, we don't write film scores nowadays like they did in the 30s. Why? Because humans were different. So let's try and capture some of that. And if there's a movie in the 30s, I try to send my brains back in times, like in a Woody Allen movie kind of thing, you know, where you go into the picture and it's I don't know, it's something that I find exciting.
No, I just think about that too, because again, all these things, these scores, even with these, especially about these real life historical figures you've done films about, you can really feel the tension in those scores, and. Part of that tension comes from me as somebody who sees movies, that you're not trying to imitate a film score of that period. At no point are you doing any of those
things. Of course, never. No, I would never do that. No,
but
of course.
But you must get asked about, well, why not try that?
That's done. It was done in 1935 or in 1952. I'm not going to copy Alex North. It's stupid. I should be inspired by Alex North because of his Spartacus Love theme. For example, or The Misfits, and listen to it and watch his scores and grasp all the beauty of it, and then move on to who I am today in 2018. Already.
Yeah, like Benjamin Button, you're just getting younger and younger.
Yeah,
all the time.
Sure.
What a time. You have to come back and do the show again, please.
Yeah, I will come.
My guest is Academy Award winner Alex, and Golden Globe winner Alex Desplat, where I saw him just a couple of days ago for his score for The Shape of Water. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake White. I'm going to go listen to some Miles Davis. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.